Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 15th of January. Our guest this hour has long proposed giving students 2 years of free college at any public institution. Last year, she discussed it with the White House's Domestic Policy Council, and last month, she got a call from an official at the White House saying that it was moving forward with a free college proposal. President Obama proposed this last Friday, providing free community college tuition to millions of students. He did this at Pellissippi State Community College in Tennessee. Tennessee chosen because it has a plan for doing a similar version to the president's proposal that will start up this year. The president's proposal calls for the federal government to pay for about three-quarters of students' tuition. Participating states would kick in the rest. It has been called the America's College Promise Plan. Our guest this hour has been interested in this issue for a long time. Professor Sarah Goldrick Rabb is the founding director of the Wisconsin Hope Lab, the nation's first research laboratory aimed at improving equitable outcomes in post-secondary education. She's a professor of educational policy studies and sociology at UW-Madison, and she has worked extensively with local, state, and national communities, also with governors and state legislators, to craft policies to make college more affordable, collaborating with nonprofit organizations who are examining the effects of their practices and providing technical assistance to congressional staff, think tanks, and those are throughout Washington, D.C. She has testified before the Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, and she is with us this hour of the program. I think that the president's proposal created a lot of discussion, and knowing how interested this audience is in education, I'm sure that you will have a lot to say on his proposal. Our phone number for you to join the conversation with Professor Goldrick Rabb is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, leave your messages there. We love to read them. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Professor Sarah Goldrick Rabb, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. So, isn't this amazing? You talked about this in the White House with the Domestic Policy Council. Then you get a phone call saying, well, we think we might do something related to your proposal.
Yeah, it's been a bit of an honor and a privilege, and I have to admit, a little bit of a shock, too.
What did you propose to the White House Domestic Policy Council?
Well, I went there mainly to talk about what I have learned from my research in Wisconsin and elsewhere about the challenges that students and families are facing in affording college. And I went there to talk most generally about those research findings and to propose the idea that one solution that really might take hold and do a lot of good for the country would be to offer families and students 2 years of higher education at no cost to them, just to give them a leg up and to give them a start.
When you look at the statistics that show how much middle-income families and low-income families spend on tuition on college, it becomes really just not affordable unless you get a substantial scholarship.
That's right, and very few families actually do get that sort of scholarship. You know, today when we think about tuition and fees, it's actually just a small fraction of what it costs to go to college. It might surprise your listeners to know that, for example, community college tuition is only about a fifth of the total cost of going to college. Students need to come up with a great deal of money in order to actually enroll and graduate.
And what is that money for?
That money covers all of the rest of what it really takes to focus on school. So, for example, if you want a student to be in class every day and study, like we do, then we need them to be able to afford to buy their books and supplies, which are far more expensive today than they've ever been
in the past. Yes, they are.
Right? And we also need them to be able to make their rent, pay their utilities, put gas in their car, feed their children. They need to do all of those things and do school. And, you know, once upon a time, many of us might think, well, I used to work and go to college at the same time. I challenge your listeners to think about how they would do that today when work pays less than it ever did and is more unstable than ever before. It is really hard to do that balancing act, and increasing numbers of students are finding out that it doesn't work.
The president's proposal, as I understand it, is focusing on community colleges. Is that okay with you, or do you think it should be the first 2 years of any public college?
Look, I'm pragmatic about this. This is an enormous step in the right direction for the Obama administration to take. And I think that community colleges are a critical part of higher ed. I've been focused on working on them and studying them for more than 15 years now. It's a great place to start. Is it where we want to finish? Is it the final step? No, of course not. But we have to start somewhere, and we have to remember that policymaking is complicated. It takes time. It took us more than 50 years to get free high schools. We have to start somewhere.
And you point out that community colleges were initially meant to be free. You say it's where we started and we got lost.
That's right. You know, when we go back and we think about the origins of why we created community colleges as a nation to begin with, they were homegrown institutions out of local areas from people saying, we need a really affordable and local place to extend our education so that we can be contributing members of society, have good jobs, all those sorts of things. Once upon a time, many people remember, my grandfather remembers, you know, there are folks' parents who remember when community college was genuinely free or very close to free. It might surprise people to know today that sometimes the net price of going to community college is as high as it is to go to a four-year. This is a major change.
I think it would also surprise people to learn that the 1,100 is the rough estimate community colleges in the country educate about 40% of American college students.
It is incredible, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, it amazes me. Most of the time when you're listening to the radio or you're watching television, you're hearing about a set of colleges that educates maybe the top 5% of all students. We hear about Harvard and Stanford and UW-Madison, and we hear about Michigan, and we hear about the Big Ten. This is a small slice of higher ed. Most of America goes to college at places like our community college.
Mm-hmm. So the president's plan needs to be flushed out in some ways. I guess that we don't really have a price tag for this. The federal government, I understand, would do 3/4 of the cost, and then state governments would do 1/4 of the cost. Is that the way you understand it?
The way that they've set this up, first of all, is a partnership, yes. It's a partnership between the federal government and states. Now, currently, community colleges are mostly funded by states and localities. In other words, they pick up the bill, and it's picked up, you know, at home, and we don't get that much federal help. That means that if a state feels that its budget is constrained, it cuts funding to the community colleges, usually at the same time that people are starting to enroll in them, usually during recessions, okay, when people are out of work. This leaves that sector very vulnerable and unable to count on the money. What's happening here is the president is saying, hang on, instead of you paying, you the state paying 100%, you only have to pay 25%. We will, the federal government, will put in 75%. Now that's a huge shift where people are framing this like the states are asked to do more. They're actually being asked to do less. In terms of all the details, just as we have every year policy proposals that come out in January pre-State of the Union, we should fully expect that the administration will release the details of this proposal and all the budget information during the State of the Union and the budget process. Mm-hmm. And that's normal and what happens every year.
So we'll hear more about it next Tuesday.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Professor Goldrick Rabb, let's talk about Tennessee. The president, I would imagine, chose the community college in Tennessee to announce this because Tennessee has a similar kind of plan. Is that right? That's going to start up this year?
Well, Tennessee, this was a very smart decision on his part. You know, so Tennessee, under a Republican governor, took steps towards making community college free. And what's important there is we have a Republican governor who recognizes the economic imperative of helping more people succeed in community colleges. And he heard this from his business community. And so they did take steps to making it free. The kind of steps they took are not going to promote degree completion in the same way that the president's proposal will. So the way that the Tennessee did it was that Tennessee said, okay, you're already getting financial aid. If there's anything left over after you go through all that paperwork that's not covered, we'll fill in the gaps. That's helpful, but it's only helpful in the margins, and it helps people start college but not necessarily finish.
Mm-hmm.
The president said, good idea, Tennessee. You know, thank you for getting the conversation started. Let's build on this policy idea and strengthen it so that we have students who not only start college but finish it. So he took it a step further.
Most of the press reports looking at this plan say that it doesn't stand a chance with Republicans dominating both the House and the Senate. What do you say to them?
What I say to them is patience. You know, what I think is going on here is that we are living in a culture that wants immediate gratification. Policies that are announced immediately are ready to go and are put into action right away. That isn't how the best pieces of policymaking in this country have happened. They have happened over the course of a decade or more, and what he has done today is plant the seeds of a policy that will develop and that will be worked out over time and that will be put into place and sustainable when it is.
Mm-hmm.
So whether or not this Congress acts, and I don't think we can count on this Congress to do much, he has still put down a really important marker for the future policymaking that will come even in the next administration.
And will this be directed toward low-income families, or is this for everybody?
You know, the truth is this is for everybody,
mm-hmm.
and that's one of the reasons that I so strongly support it. Throughout Wisconsin, we have been very interested in how low-income families are managing to make ends meet for college. But what we have discovered is that they are struggling far more than most people would think, since we know they're getting aid. Frankly, the aid is insufficient, but also the middle class is really struggling. And I've heard from so many students whose families are really just barely hanging on to the middle class, barely got their foot there anymore. And they're getting very little to no help for college. This policy helps them while helping low-income folks too. It's much more inclusive, and I think that should make it more popular and more sustainable.
And you have heard so many stories, and I'm sure you've heard more than most people have, about the number of students who have so much debt when they get out of school that it changes their whole life plan in terms of when they're going to get married or settle down in a house or have children. The whole 20s decade has changed as a result of debt.
Yeah, I do think that that is a major issue. And I think the part that troubles me the most is that the debt isn't a choice anymore. You know, sometimes we make life choices. We decide we want to buy a house. It's a choice. You could rent. You really could, you know, and then you decide to buy a house and you take on debt. The decision to not attend college today is not much of a choice. You really do need to go and get at least some sort of education at the 13th and 14th year. And it really isn't possible anymore to pay the college bill for most folks without taking on debt and working. I think it's important to know these students with debt did not party in college and get their debt because they refused to work. They worked and they took debt. And now here they are. And it's gonna create some real lasting problems.
We're going to welcome phone calls to find out what the audience thinks about the president's proposal, providing free community college tuition to, it would be, millions of students. He proposed this last Friday, and it's an idea that our guest would like to make even broader, free college for everybody for the first 2 years. But she went to the White House and spoke to the Domestic Policy Council, and lo and behold, heard from them about a month ago saying that they were moving forward with a free college proposal. It is for community colleges, as you probably know. And there are requirements. Students have to attend at least half-time, have a 2.5 GPA, make progress, steady progress toward completing their degree. And we wonder what you think about this. Is this an idea whose time has come once again? It was the idea of community colleges many years ago. Would it help a whole big number of students to be able to go to school and not have debt? Would it be a great relief for low-income families, for middle-income families? Should it be targeted just to middle-income families and to low-income families? And should it be expanded to all colleges? Is there a legitimate question as to whether or not the Republicans will get behind this program, even though Tennessee, with a Republican governor, has moved to something similar. Well, we'd love to hear from you, and I anticipate that many of you have thoughts about this. Here's how you reach our conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and our guest this hour is Professor Sarah Goldrick-Rabb, founding director of the Wisconsin Hope Lab, which is a research facility aimed at improving equitable outcomes in post-secondary education. She's professor of educational policy studies and sociology at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Phone lines are filled. I knew you'd want to talk about this. We'll be with you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Community college, free community college tuition for the first 2 years. What do you think of the plan? That's what we're talking about this hour. And our phone number is 800-486-8655. Jeff in Milwaukee is our first caller for you. Hi, Jeff.
Good afternoon. Yes, so let me get this straight then. The professors or the instructors then would be volunteering, and the books, there would be no charge for the books. There would be no charge at all for school rooms or classrooms in order for it to be free?
Jeff, I think you're asking the question to me, and let me give you a response. I think that you're raising a point that I've heard from many other folks, and I think that there's confusion. We're talking about the price of college being free and not the cost of college being free. As you know, for example, Jeff, when you go to the library near you, you can borrow books at no cost. But clearly there is a cost to providing it, and the way that you do that is in your community. You all collectively share that cost so that anyone can enter the library and borrow books. The reason that we do that is because it is a good thing for people to be able to read and become educated at the library. So to answer your question, no. Clearly, the faculty and the staff will not be working for free. We will be funding it on the back end, although states will have to pay less than they do today. I hope you heard that earlier. But the price to the students will be zero.
Kara writes on Facebook, would this be only for people just out of high school? I'm almost 40, but would like to be able to go to school. I can't imagine how I could ever afford to.
That's exactly what this is about. And as the president said, this is both for the young and the young at heart. This is for everyone. This is not merely for young folks and people who need to go back to school in order to further their careers, in order to rejoin the labor market after having raised kids. For whatever reason, it's for them as well.
Thanks, Jeff, for your call. Tony in Sparta. Hi. Tony, are you there? I'm sorry, you got to turn your radio down in order to get on the air. Doug in Duluth, hi. Doug?
Yes.
Go right ahead, Doug.
Oh, hi, this is Doug in Duluth. In the 1960s, I attended California University College, and basically the tuition was very minimal, extremely minimal, and the junior colleges were free, essentially. There was extremely little, if any, tuition. So what happened out in California that made that all go away, and how are we going to avoid that problem?
That's a wonderful question, and I'm glad that you've had that experience in California to know that once upon a time, that was the case there. What changed over time was that in California, the state managed and decided to withdraw support for that system. So as they cut support for the institutions, then gradually the burden was shifted back to the students once again. So the price for the students rose, and the state saved itself money. What's required to do this is for all of us to share the cost of paying for it so that each individually we don't have to pay less. But you're right, it was done once upon a time, and the fact is that in California, college-going rates have always been higher. And that today that has changed a lot, and that's not true in California. They'd like to return to that.
Is our model unusual when you look at other countries in the world? We hear so much about college being much, much, much less expensive in so many countries in the world.
You know, we're different, but we're different in very many ways. To be honest, I don't think it's really fair to compare us to places, say, like Germany or Britain, because in those places, most people get through secondary schooling, right, through high school, but aren't allowed to go on to college.
Yes.
They track their populations from a much younger age, and they aren't nearly as inclusive and open as we are. So we stand apart in being a very large country with a very multifaceted citizenry, and we believe in second chances. It's part of the American dream. And so financing in this country is fairly unique.
Tyson in Madison, hi.
Yeah, I was curious to know how and why student loans are not dischargeable by debt, meaning that if a person were to become under so much debt that they couldn't afford to pay it back and file bankruptcy, that they can't discharge that debt, and if that would ever possibly change in the future.
I think you are raising a question that many people across the country are raising, and that many folks, including myself, have asked Congress to change. I believe that the non-dischargeability clause, as it's called, was put into place to protect banks and their investments, because, of course, it's difficult to take back the money they gave you once you've gotten your education. But there really today is no justification for the non-dischargeability clause, and I'm hopeful that we will eventually convince Congress to reverse that and make it dischargeable in severe circumstances like those you've described.
Let me ask you to talk more about this stipulation in the program. The money could only be used for academic programs that fully transfer to public four-year colleges or to job training programs that have high graduation rates and also lead to degrees and certificates in high-demand fields. Let's focus on the second part of that. Do we know what those programs might be? Who would decide what they are? There would obviously have to be a great deal of coordination with business, wouldn't there?
Yeah, Kathleen, you're asking a really, really good and difficult question. So this piece of the requirement is very consistent with how the president has talked about the purpose of education for many years, to contribute to the job market and to tie opportunities to labor market needs. As you said, the devil's in the details there. If we can clearly identify programs that really do good have good labor market outcomes, then we have something to work with. But identifying them is hard. It's much harder than people make it out to be. So this is not something that I have advocated for, precisely because it could present a narrowing of opportunities for people, and we might inadvertently shut down or limit opportunities to programs that are doing a good job, but we're not good at measuring how good they're doing. So this is something that the president added to this plan that I believe they're going to need to really work out, and it's going to be a challenge.
What about the idea of being able to transfer your credits to a public four-year college or university?
I think that's a good thing, and I think that it's great in Wisconsin that we've worked on that sort of thing. It's certainly the case that we'd like to believe that, you know, when people have achieved a certain level, they can transfer that knowledge and those credits to continue on. I think what has been difficult is that we have put colleges and universities into a competitive environment in which they feel that they have to stick up for themselves rather than stick up mainly for the students. We need to change that environment so that the institutions win when they help students out, and they don't have to worry so much about who did what for which student so they can get credit for it. If we could diminish that sort of situation for them and help them focus on just doing right by students, then these sorts of requirements won't be necessary.
Tyson, thanks for your call. Ed in Madison, hi.
Yes, hi. I had listened both to the morning discussion the Highway 51 version of Wisconsin Public Radio. And unfortunately, I'm driving. I hope this goofy GPS doesn't destroy things here. My question deals with the need to have closer articulation between K-12 schools and 2- and 4-year schools, and not necessarily having the grade levels as barriers, that there should be more fluid opportunity for students if they're ready at 10th or 11th or 12th grade to start taking 2-year college courses towards a career, we're still with way too many barriers locally, because it's a local decision rather than a uniform decision around the state to allow the students to do it and to allow the funding to stay with that student in the district. So there's mm-hmm. always barriers right now that keep the kids from getting the kind of education at the time that they need it to pursue those career areas that they really want to get into.
I agree with you. I think that part of what you're saying reflects the fact that we have not evolved yet. We have not helped our education system catch up to today's realities. And the reality is that these grade levels are somewhat arbitrary. And it's also somewhat arbitrary that we have 12 grades in K-12 education and that the 13th begins college. There's nothing magical about the 12th year. There are programs out there that do allow students at the time that they're ready, say in 10th grade, to begin to take college-level coursework. And the results of research that has been conducted on those programs finds that they are very effective at helping students obtain their degrees and do so in a more cost-effective way. The need to think boldly and creatively here based on evidence is the lesson from that kind of work. And I hope that's what the president is doing here, is challenging us to move away from the same old ways of doing things and to try to find new ones that better meet our needs.
Well, one thing seems to be clear is that the time is ripe for some kind of change, and particularly in making college more affordable, don't you think, Professor Goldrick Rabb? Because we're hearing from so many people, we're at a tipping point on this issue, that people just can't afford it and something has to be done.
I agree with you. I think, frankly, when it comes to higher education, affordability is issue number one. All of the other issues we hear about, students struggling with, you know, academics in college, students not feeling like they're part of the campus, those issues, they are often part and parcel and have been a part of an effect of not having college be affordable. So I think the time is right. I think that we do need to act. And I think that those that are arguing that we should simply just kind of continue in what we're doing are either unaware or not feeling the pain that so many of our families are feeling right now.
Dennis sent an email. He wants to know if the plan includes technical colleges.
Absolutely. You know, in Wisconsin, we call some of our two-year colleges technical colleges. They are very much like the community colleges that the president is referring to, and absolutely this applies to them.
We go to Philip in Milwaukee. Hello.
I had a Fulbright in Germany, and I must say this is long overdue. In Germany, higher education is free. Not only that, they even have a separate judicial system for the students in higher education. Now, this will add to our gross domestic product. The universities today are being on a business model, and education is not a business, it is a service. And those who want students be deep in debt are really on a collision course with suicide, only they'll take all of us along with them. I strongly endorse this. I'm retired from MADC, and if I could go into high schools, I would talk to the students about this and getting their options and doing the four-year degree on their own terms in due time after they are identified in a good saleable skill.
Yeah, thank you. I very much agree with you. I think that in many ways, the changes that we have made to education over the last 30 years, those changes and their effects are going to come home to roost very soon, and they are going to affect things like our GDP. I also think that they're affecting our voting participation rates and other things that are critical to our democracy. So I very much agree with what you've said.
Thanks, Philip, for your call. Mark in Appleton, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I teach in the UW Colleges, which is a two-year transfer institution. Those credits do transfer, and this would be a great idea. I mean, most of my students are working 30, 40, and even more hours a week in order to try to pay for their schooling and living expenses, and it's a huge burden. And so this would really be a great idea. And what's happened in the last 30, 40 years, as one of your callers pointed out, is that we've shifted the cost onto the students. I mean, tuition keeps going up, but that's because we make state cuts in support and funding. Funding for UW colleges used to be, the state covered 60% of the cost of teaching a student, and now covers around 30%. And it's these changes that are really hurting us as a society, as the previous caller said as well, and that we really are all in this together. And if we want, you know, our young people to be able to work and pay Social Security so that we have Social Security when we retire, I'm older, then this is what we need to do. It's a great idea. Hopefully it will be happened. I doubt that it will, but it would be a great idea if it did come to fruition.
Professor.
Yeah, I very much appreciate that, and I have to tell you that a lot of the research that I have done has been in and with UW colleges, so this is one of the reasons why I feel like it's very well aligned. The idea is not going to come to fruition today. And I don't think we should be discouraged by that. I think that we need to understand that, again, patience is necessary to get things done right.
Jane sends this email. I'm sorry, but free is not free. Someone is picking up the tab. The president is certainly very generous with other people's money. You said that states are paying 100% of the cost of community colleges. How can that be since students are paying at least part of the actual costs? Sounds to me like the cost is shared by the state and the student.
So what I was saying before was that appropriations to community colleges, which are the money that students are not paying, is currently coming from the state and localities. That will then, instead of coming from state and localities, be shared between the state and the federal government, with the federal government picking up more. I think what your listener there is mainly referring to, or may be confused by, is the difference, again, between price and cost.
Thanks, Mark, for your call. Sarah in Zion, hi.
Hi. Hey, you know what? I'm wondering about, I want you to clear up, Ken, if a person has a bachelor's and they want to start work on a master's or a teaching certificate, can they do that at a community college and qualify? And my second question is, I remember reading a while back about some country, it wasn't Germany, some country who had free college, but then they decided that it was better if they charged a really small amount, but just enough to get students to be motivated to take it seriously and work hard in class.
So to your first question, whether you could use this to return to get a second degree or a more advanced degree, I don't know the answer to that, and I don't think it's been worked out yet. That is one of those sort of nitty-gritty details that matters to people, but I don't think policymakers have worked out. I would certainly support it, though, for many reasons, including the need to have second careers, as we all know, is becoming part of reality. To your other point or question about changes in other countries with regard to helping students have a piece, let's say, skin in the game, so they'll be motivated. Germany is actually one of those places that did try that, and then they just reversed course. They found that it was not something that was helping them, and they went back to making it free. I do question, you know, a lot of times we diagnose a problem without really understanding it. When we see students today who appear unmotivated, let's say a student was sleeping in my classroom, which has happened, you know, when we investigate further, what we find out is not that the student didn't want to do well in the class or that the student was bored, but that the student was working the night shift at COPS in order to make more money and frankly couldn't keep their eyes open. I've solved those problems much more effectively by finding out what they really matters and addressing the problem rather than assuming that what they need is sort of a kick in order to become more motivated.
Thank you, Sarah, very much for your call. And let's go to Kevin in Port Washington. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, how are you?
Not bad. My comment was that, you know, this policy is being considered because of the cost of education. And if you look at what's happened to the cost of education versus, you know, other prices in the economy, it really exploded when the government got more involved and especially started guaranteeing student loans. So then banks knew that they could loan to an 18-year-old kid with no job and no collateral a six-figure amount. And they're going to get paid no matter what if the kid defaults or not. And then the institutions now know that they can charge whatever they want because the kid can get the loan. And that's really where you saw, you know, the inflation of the price. And it created kind of an education bubble. When you see commercials for an online college at 3 in the morning, you know there's kind of a bubble there. And that leads to, you know, more people with degrees pending bar. So I don't know if the right solution is to double down and now put the entire burden on the taxpayer. And I think you're going to throw the value of a degree even more out of whack if everybody has one.
Professor.
So, you know, Kevin, you are on to something, and let me say that I agree with you that in certain respects, the availability of student loans has contributed to rising college costs. Let me disagree with you in saying that this has happened to all of higher ed. So, Kevin, what the research shows is that this has happened in private higher education. So you're right. DeVry University, University of Phoenix, Capella University, Herzing University, you name those places. These places have the ability, as a business, to decide what they're going to charge. And they'd be kind of crazy, right, to ignore the fact that the students can get student loans, and therefore they can charge more money and collect that loan money. But it is not true that our technical colleges or our UW colleges could decide to simply raise their prices and charge people more so that they can take out loans to finance those schools. The reason they can't is because these are state institutions and the state hasn't allowed that. So we have seen rising college costs in response to student loans, but it has been in private institutions. This is a program for public institutions only. And I think that's an important distinction. We don't anticipate the same behavior. But your last comment, I think, is the most telling. If we are genuinely concerned that we shouldn't help people get more education because it might diminish the value of our degrees, then I think we have a bigger problem in this society.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Our guest this hour has been calling for free first 2 years of public education, college, public colleges and universities, community colleges for quite some time. It evidently, the time has come for the administration because the White House did propose, as you all know, to provide free community college tuition to millions of students. It calls for the government to pay for three-quarters of the students' tuition. Participating states kick in the rest. It's titled the America's College Promise Plan, and we're sure to hear more about it during the President's State of the Union address next week. What do you think of this plan? Our guest in the Chronicle of Higher Education, the organization published a piece titled The Players Who Influenced Obama's Free College Plan, and one of them is our guest this hour, Sarah Goldrick Rabb, when she argued that 2 years of college should be free, as she has repeatedly in the past. Most everyone told her that was impossible, but it's on the table now. What do you think? 800-486-8655 is our number. The email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can send us a tweet, too, or on Twitter, at @KDunnShow. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to more phone calls, and let's go to Blake in Milwaukee next. Hello, Blake.
Hi there, first-time caller, so it's really nice to hear from you.
Thanks, Blake. Nice to hear from you.
I just want to call, you know, I'm a brand-new college graduate from a UW System College, graduated with honors with a biochemistry degree.
Congratulations.
And I feel really good about my degree, you know, and I tested the job market a couple of times, and, you know, I was kind of underwhelmed by, you know, starting salaries, noticing that they weren't, you know, that much different from some of my community college you know, lower, a little bit lesser education than the bachelor's degree. Didn't seem to have that much less salary. And I'm kind of worried, unfortunately, that, you know, with if we get a lot of kids into the community college system and push them through with degrees, I think it's a great thing that people are seeking education, but I'm just worried that that will value or water down my degree after paying almost, you know, $80,000 in tuition and everything that it takes to go to school. So I guess I just want to be assured that, you know, my value is still worth something or my degree is still worth something.
What are your job prospects? What areas would you be looking at, Blake?
Like pharmaceutical companies, chemical manufacturing companies with raw products, you know, and then reconsidering grad school as an option, too.
Well, this is a legitimate concern. Professor?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And first of all, Blake, congratulations on finishing Look, you're in a tough spot here, and there's a couple of reasons, though, why you are. And I just want to point out, you know, first of all, you and your colleagues today graduating at this time period following the Great Recession, you're facing one of the toughest labor markets that's ever been around. Okay, so it's a special circumstance, and it's lousy, and there's really nothing we can say except it really is lousy for you, and I'm very sorry about that. I do think, however, that you will benefit from your friends, neighbors, colleagues, people down the street, et cetera, getting an education, even if you don't earn more than them. And you have to remember that we know that people who get additional education are less likely to lean on us as taxpayers. They're more likely to be safe, secure, sending their own kids to school, et cetera. Now, I know that doesn't address your concern about the higher wage premium that you might receive, but if you look at the charts that show you the returns to your degree, there actually was never any indication you would out-earn. What are you, 22, 23 years old? Does that sound right?
Yeah, 23 years old.
Okay.
Yep, that's right.
23 years old. Okay, so if we look at the wage returns to your degree, you are not actually expected to be out-earning your counterparts yet at this age. What you will see as you move closer to 30 is that your wages will gradually become higher than those of the community college graduates. You will be more steadily employed. You will be less likely to be laid off or to have multiple careers. And by the time you're 40, and I know that seems really far in the future, but you will be much different than those other counterparts. But the thing is, you're not going to get the immediate gratification of stepping right out of college into the labor market and being ahead, because your counterparts have been in the job market longer than you. They did a 2-year degree. You did a 4-year. And so I have to again say, I know it's difficult. It's a lousy time with this economy, but patience is going to pay off. And it is predictable from many charts over many decades that you wouldn't, in fact, be receiving the premium yet. So please hang in there. And, you know, I'll ask you again in 10 years how you're feeling about your degree.
And maybe you'll just
be
at the right spot at the right time, Blake, and you're going to get a job soon.
Yep, let's hope.
Oh, right. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for your call. Bob is calling from Mobile, Alabama. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. I'm a veteran, and I just graduated from the University of South Alabama on the post 9/11 GI Bill, and also graduated from Bishop State Community College.
Wow.
With the same, and I couldn't possibly have done it without it. It's a fantastic program, and it's kind of depressing to see the reaction among fellow veterans to the free community college proposal as a bad thing. They almost look at it as that should be their exclusive province, and it's just kind of disheartening, especially since the proposal will do such a great job of protecting a lot of the most vulnerable populations, like veterans and borderline students, from these predatory for-profit diploma mills, you know?
I think that's exactly right, Bob, and I'm so grateful to you, first, for your service and for the fact that you went on and used those benefits and got a degree. You know, when Nancy Kendall, who wrote this proposal with me, when we were sitting down thinking about this, we thought about the generations of people who have benefited from the likes of the GI Bill. My grandfather went to college on the GI Bill. His family didn't have any money. This would never have been possible without that bill, and it made a huge difference in his life, in my life, in the lives of my cousins. I think that, you know, you're right. I think some people feel threatened that if other folks get something, they lose. And I think we have to remember, like you're pointing out, that when you get something, when I get something, we all win. And I think it's wonderful that you're acknowledging that, and I hope that you take your degree and put it to good use and go on to have a great life.
Yeah. What will you do now, Bob? What kind of employment?
Well, I'm interviewing for jobs right now, and I'd just like to work for a few years and then open my own business. And
great.
I just couldn't possibly have done it without the post 9/11 GI Bill. It's just such a fantastic program, and instead of feeling protective of my benefits, I think that everyone should get this kind of help.
You're
so I thank you very much, Professor, for everything you do.
Sure. You sound like a great investment for taxpayers. We should want to invest in folks like you.
And a generous man as well. Thanks, Bob, for your call. Kelly in Salem, hi.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question. My daughter is a junior in high school, and we're looking at schools now. And I need a little bit of clarity on the bill, if you know. We're right on the border of Wisconsin, Illinois. And there's a community college that's over the border in Illinois that she could go to, but nothing really around here. Would that be something that would be doable with the bill? And if not, do you know any information on if she could go to a UW State College and get those first 2 years for free instead?
This is such a good question, and I really feel for you in this situation because geography is so tough for so many families. You know, honestly, I don't think that the president or his advisors have worked out the question you're asking, which is, would community college be free if you went out of state for community college? I think that certainly the UW colleges, if this program were to occur tomorrow, the UW colleges would be included. The ones in Illinois would be included, but I just don't know whether you'll be able to cross state lines to do it. And, you know, I understand that that uncertainty makes this decision for you and your family right now really hard. It, to me, this is one reason we have got to learn to think beyond state borders, because our families are having to make choices that certainly go beyond borders. And I see no reason, certainly under the plan that Nancy and I wrote, you'd be able to do that. But, of course, I can't guarantee you that they're going to follow everything that I said.
So when you look at this entirely realistically, Professor Goldreich-Grabb, mm-hmm. do you think that this is an idea being proposed now but would be implemented 5 years hence, 10 years hence? Is this being proposed now and could perhaps be implemented next year?
I've been at this 15 years now at this point. My experience thus far tells me it's unlikely that we would see something in the next year or maybe even five. I really think the timeline here is 10 to 20, and I think we can all accelerate it if the folks like your listeners who are enthused and do think it's promising make this a priority. You know, it's unfortunate that most of the time when we're electing people to office, we aren't asking them, where do you stand on college affordability? It's not a voting issue for most people. If we want this thing to move forward, we need to prioritize it. And the parents of young children today or the folks who think they're going to want to go back to college, you need to take action now to push for things like this and to make sure that the details are done the way that you want them, so that we do have it. If we only think about, oh, we're disappointed that it won't happen next year, so just give up, that's a surefire way to make sure we're in this situation in the same way in 10 years.
Right. Less than a minute. Karen, if you could just make your point quickly from Westby.
Okay. Yes, three of them, I guess. First of all, my Amish neighbors, when you talk about education, they ask, well, do you have an eighth grade education? Because to them, that's all you need. And the second point, I guess, I want to make, when my mother went to high school, you had to pay to go to high school. And did it water down the value of a high school diploma when it became free for everybody to get one? And third, if we're going to bar people from higher education due to economics, doesn't that behoove us to provide benefits to those who don't have the access to a higher degree so that they don't live in abject poverty because they didn't get that four-year degree?
And on those questions and thoughts, we'll say goodbye. Worth thinking about. Thank you very much, Professor Sarah Goldreich-Grabb. A great deal of interest in this topic, and we appreciate all your time. And
thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, our pleasure. We'll talk again. Thank you. Our guest, Professor Sarah Goldreich-Grabb, she is founding director of the Wisconsin Hope Lab. It's a research laboratory set to improve equitable outcomes in post-secondary education. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this program and to Scotty as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News coming up, and a man you want to know a whole lot about. We'll talk about him hour two.